From one islander to another, Isle of Wight Radio proudly presents John Hannam Meets.
Hi, and welcome to another John Hannam Meets archive. Today, I'm going back to 1978 to celebrate the life of the late Frank Boff, who sadly died in late October 2020. This was recorded backstage at Sandown Pavilion on an old cassette tape recorder as notes for a newspaper article. So we're going right back to 1978.
Another Hannam Archive.
Delighted to say my guest tonight is Frank Boff. Frank, welcome to the Isle of Wight.
That's kind of you, John. Thank you very much.
Frank, we see you a lot on television connected with sport. Were you a great sportsman at school?
Well, I really was, yes, very enthusiastic. And I went to school and I played lots of sports. Mainly, I did a bit of running, but mainly a lot of football and cricket and hockey, which are the three sports I played to some standard. I mean, not as a professional, but to some amateur level. And I suppose the most exciting thing I did as a sportsman, I once played at Wembley in a competitive match. And that's something that Jimmy Hill's never done, and I remind him of that about once a month. But, cricket, I think, above all, is my favourite sport. I mean, on Grandstand, of course, we cover the whole spectrum, and I see a tremendous amount of sport going on at the very highest level. But as a sportsman, the game that gives me most satisfaction is cricket. I just think it's got everything. The trouble is I don't play anymore, because when Grandstand came along and all my Saturdays closed up, that simply meant that I couldn't be a reliable member of anybody's team, so that was the end of that. But and hockey as well was the third sport. I played hockey for Shropshire, which that might seem a slightly arrogant thing to say, but it's a very thinly populated county, you know, and if you had a stick, you were in the team, that kind of thing. But yes, always been very enthusiastic about sport.
Frank, let's go back to the early days. How did you sort of get the break into television, really?
Well, it's a long story, and of course it's a question I get asked regularly, not least of all by youngsters who want to do it. You know, youngsters write and say, look, I'm 13 or 14 and I've got to decide my O-level options. You know, which O-level should I sit so I can become a broadcaster? And they're very difficult letters to answer, because most people get into it through journalism. That's the usual way. But I got in through a slight backdoor, in the sense that I went to university and I read a history degree and I went into industry and I worked at ICI in County Durham. For five or six, 7 years. And I started then to try and hammer my way into broadcasting. I was interested in sport and I was slightly dissatisfied with what I was doing. And I suppose it's rather like, if I can draw the analogy of the cake, it's like all the slices of the cake need to coincide for your benefit. You know, the fact that you're trying to hammer your way into broadcasting is one slice. The fact that you can do it when you get there is another. But all the other slices, like most things in life, are outside your control. You know, there's a slice of luck and who you meet and somebody else's decision. And it so happened that at the time I was trying to get in, I was in the northeast of England, and the BBC were starting more regional television. And they were starting an early evening magazine programme called Look North in that part of the world, which is the programme's now embraced by Nationwide. And I got in there. I mean, I did one or two little sports broadcasts first, and it was just a question, you know, as so often happens, of just being at the right place at the right time when they needed somebody. So I was very lucky in that sense.
When you come across on television, you're always so wonderfully cool and relaxed. Is it a gift or is it something you can learn over the years, really?
Well, you see, John, I'm not an actor playing a part. I am me being me most of the time, and therefore there's only one way I know how to do it, and that is the way I am. And therefore, there's no point in panicking. I mean, a lot of things go on which are pressurised and slightly hysterical and... you know, if you're trying to juggle a multi-sport program and things are going on all the time and you're very anxious to get the very best out of every outside broadcast you've got and every piece of news you've got, but really being relaxed, giving the appearance of being relaxed is really a practiced art in a way. I mean, I'm not really relaxed. I am being relaxed, but deep down, you know, there's a knot in my stomach. But as I say, either you know, you do it the way you know how and it fits and people accept it, or you go away and work somewhere else. I've never quite discovered the answer to that one.
Is there one thing in particular that perhaps would make our listeners laugh? Any sort of funny thing that's happened that you can recollect over the years?
Well, That's rather difficult to say. I mean, most of them are unrepeatable. That's the trouble. I mean, most of the really funny ones are really not for publication. But I have a great difficulty with names, and I have to remember a lot of names because it's all the time, you know, world champion this, James Hunt, whatever it is, you know, names, identify. Somebody puts a picture of a guy on, and who's that? And I've got to name him all the time. I once did an interview, the very first interview I did on television in Newcastle, with a lady called Alderman Mrs. Teresa Russell, who was the mayor of Newcastle. And I forgot her name, and it was a very early lesson I learnt. And now I have names written about my person, you know, and I write them on my cuffs. And I thought I got the whole thing well and truly sorted out, until one day, on a Sunday cricket match at Fenner's Cricket Ground, Cambridge. And it was in the early days of Sunday cricket, and the teams used to play for a cheque for £100 at the end of the match, and we used to get somebody posh to present it. And the chap who did it for us on 3 years that we started our season there was R.A. Butler, Rab Butler, the old Tory right-wing politician. And now, of course, Lord Butler, Master of Trinity College. In fact, he's just leaving, I see, this week. And I would introduce myself to him and explain the mechanics, how there'd be a low camera outside the pavilion. He'd be on my right, and the other guy would be on my left. I'd be in the middle, and I'd introduce them, and he could hand over the cheque and say a few words, and then would they stand still while I got out of the programme with dignity. And it all worked marvellously for the 2 years, and then the third year I set up this little tableau, and they came to me on the low camera, and I said, and it's all live television, you see, that's the great thing about it, that's the drug in a way, because live television is, you know, you're there warts and all, and there's no second chance, there's an opportunity going past your nose every second to be lost or taken. And I said, we've had a marvellous start to the Sunday cricket season here, I said, on BBC Two, I said, and the International Cavaliers, which was the team playing, have beaten Oxford and Cambridge past and present by so many runs, and here's Ted Dexter, the captain of the Cavaliers, to receive the cheque, presented, I'm delighted to say, by, and I turned to his lordship, and I couldn't remember his name. I mean, a great cloud came over my mind. And you see, people say, what do you do when you dry on television? Well, you can't. You've just got to go on. There's no alternative. You've just got to go on and say something. And fighting for my professional life, my next words actually were on the air, by my friend on my right, I said very brightly. And the producer said to me afterwards, he said, well, he said, I tell you something, Frank, he said, at least you got his bloody politics right. But it was a terrible moment, a really awful moment.
Frank, recently you've appeared before at least 21 million on the World Cup at odd occasions there. And looking back on the World Cup, do you think from a BBC television point of view, were you happy how it came over?
No, nobody's ever happy. I mean, the great thing about this business is you wouldn't stay in it unless you thought you could always be better, you could always improve it. And of course, we can all improve on what we're doing. And I mean, that goes throughout life. Anybody who is totally satisfied with what they're doing and thinks they're doing it their absolute ultimate, and that must be very boring. So, of course, you know, we always feel we can do it better, and everybody pitches in. It's a great teamwork. Teamwork's one of those old-fashioned words now, but in television it just got to happen, you know. I mean, if on Grandstand, somebody in the team who's got an apparently quite small job, I mean, if he's been on the booze the night before or he's fallen out with his wife, it actually shows on Saturday afternoon because he isn't quite at his peak. So we're all the time trying to improve and be better, and that's the charm of it, because you come off the air after 4.5 hours of a television programme, a Grandstand or a World Cup Grandstand or whatever it is, and you look in the right hand and those are the chances you've taken, and you're proud of those. You've got them right, you've got the facts right, you've reacted properly, you've smoothed over the cracks, you've been, you know, nice and easy and so on. But in the left hand, inevitably, are the ones you've dropped, and you say, damn it, you know, next time I will get it all right. So we're never entirely happy, no, but we think it went very well, but that's not for me to say, really.
I think we're all hoping now that England are going to qualify in the next one, which will be Spain, hopefully that will make all the difference, really, won't it?
Well, obviously Scotland, poor Scotland, did us no favours at all, really, you know, we were very disappointed for them. And obviously, if we get England and Scotland in the competition together, that would be marvellous. And if we could get them into the second round of matches, because that sustains tremendous interest and gets everybody involved. I mean, football is immensely popular, and people will watch anyway. I mean, millions of people, as you said, will watch Argentina playing Holland in a final. But how many more would be watching if it were, my God, dare I say, England versus Scotland in a World Cup final? But something like that, a really big involvement by one of the home sides, or Wales. You see, they were very unlucky not to go this time.
Frank, I was driving along one evening, I think it was, in a car, and I listened to a comedy radio show that you actually took part in.
Yes.
And Tell us about that, because it came over very, very well.
I get asked to do 1,000 things, and you, if you're a straight man like I am, you have to be very careful, because if you get involved in the world of true show business, as it were, and you get involved with comedians and comics, you know, it's very, unless they're very careful, they can let you down. Now, take the Mork and Wise Christmas show. That's super, because they... I mean, they actually persuaded Shirley Bassey to wear army boots on Christmas. Now, you know, she did that because she trusted them, you see. And they will take the mickey out of somebody like Shirley Bassey or me or Andre Previn or whoever without actually taking anything away from them. And obviously, you know, I like to diversify. I've got a marvellous life anyway because I can be doing a prime minister one day and nationwide and a cup final in grandstand the next. So I get an enormously wide variety of things to do. And if I can do a little bit of comedy, then I you know, I like to. We all love to make people laugh, you know, and that's the great satisfaction.
How do you see your television future, really? Do you think it's going to be more in current affairs or more in sport, would you think?
I honestly don't know. It's a question that is quite often asked because, you know, I mean, I just hope I stay in work. I mean, I don't quite know. As I've said already, I'm very lucky to have this widespread of sport and current affairs, and it's the variety which, you know, gives me the zest and the interest in the whole thing. I mean, you see, 3.5 weeks of World Cup for me was very limiting, although I enjoyed it enormously. It's lovely now to get back to Nationwide and do that and do other things as well. And I don't know, short of playing Hamlet for Drama Department, I'm not quite certain what I can do yet.
That leads me on to my next question, which was tonight you're appearing here at Sandlane Pavilion in a theatre.
Yes.
What sort of interest have you got in the live theatre?
Well, I'm a bit of a ham at heart. I was never a professional actor, but I played some very good parts in a very good amateur group in the northeast of England. It was a cracking good group, and I've played some good Shakespearean roles. I've actually played Hamlet and Macbeth and one or two straight plays as well. So I quite enjoy looking at the audience, and that's quite different from a television lens. With a television lens, I'm now completely at home. I mean, I know what I can do with it. There's lots of problems of concentration, homework, all the things that you need to do to make a television program look simple, and that's how it should be. It should look easy. And if people sometimes say to me, what a great job you've got. You know, what else do you do apart from 4.5 hours on a Saturday afternoon? Now, I bridle at that because you think, my God, don't they realize how much work goes into it? And then you think, well, that's what you're trying to achieve, that it looks absolutely easy, that you walk up and it all unrolls in front of you like a magic carpet, which it doesn't, of course. An immense amount of preparation has to go into it. But looking at an audience is another excitement indeed, because they sit there and they fold their arms and you can see the whites of their eyes and they say, right, you know, interest me or make me laugh. And well, there we are. I don't know whether it'll work or not. I do quite a lot of speaking anyway, so I'm not unaccustomed to live audiences.
I saw Richard Whitmore burst forth into song the other night on Pebblemill. Is there any
chance
of
you? I'm not going to do that. No. I did once actually sing on television. Cilla Black rang me up and said, I want you to come on the programme because we've got some footballing dogs and I'd like you to do the commentary on the footballing dogs. And I said, look, love, there's no way I'm going to do a commentary on footballing dogs. But I said, I've got a very good idea. I've always wanted to sing on television. Why don't I sing and why don't you do the commentary on the footballing dogs? And she swallowed it and I sang and she did the commentary. It worked very well.
Frank, when you're not in front of the television screens, how do you relax? How do you get away from everything?
Oh, at home, very much at home. Love to go there. That's where sanity is. You know, it's about half an hour's drive from where I normally work, and in that half an hour, you know, it's like going into another world, and that's where my relaxation is.
I often like to wonder what sort of music personalities enjoy. What sort of music would you listen to at home?
Oh, and I have a Welsh wife, and that means that we have an immense range of music. On the one hand, I'm nuts about Pink Floyd, who I think are super. And, you know, John Williams, guitar music, lots of classical orchestral pieces. I mean, really, the boring answer to your question is a hell of a lot across a wide area, you know. And we've got three sons, and they're all now in there. Well, two of them in their mid-teens. So the house is rocking most of the day, as anybody with children of that age, you know, or even younger, knows it does. So there's no shortage of selection at all.
Frank, it's nice to see you on the Isle of Wight. Is this your first visit, or have you been to us before?
Oh, no, I've been here several times before. We had our famous Nationwide yacht race off the Isle of Wight, and the wind didn't blow at all. We had eight marvellous yachts, and there they stood in a placid bay. It'd be lovely today. There's a nice brisk breeze brewing. Oh, yes, several times. And once made a film about cows, the regatta of cows, which was very, very pleasant. But I don't know the island very well, I must confess.
Thank you very much for taking out time to speak to us. May we wish you a very long and successful career, whichever direction it goes in.
Thank you very much, John.
It's great. He's got a swell personality. He meets and greets the stars with such amenity. Good enough to make you coming out of the street. John Hannamy. That's right.
Thank you so much for listening to another John Hannam Meets Archive. Today, we went back to 1978 to celebrate the life of the late Frank Boff. Please go to my website, johnhannam.com, for news of future interviews. Bye-bye for now.
Well, that was super smashing great, wasn't it? Jim Bourne here, just reminding you, you've been listening to John Hannam.